right, welcome back everybody to the ninth episode of the Tiger View podcast. I just kind of want to recap our last episode Dawson and I had. So we got to speak with one of Dawson's good friends, Daniel, and we really went into the breakdown of the our college football post spring ball top 25, and it was a really good episode. It ended up almost being 2 hours long. But anyways, if you're interested in learning about the upcoming college football season and where we rank the teams heading in post spring, then make sure you check out that last episode. But yeah, Dawson, just another week's come and gone like always, and we got more stuff to talk about. So yeah, I just kind of want to run through the schedule real quick. So obviously we're gonna recap the baseball weekend series, and then recap the softball, the Clemson regional with softball. And then run back into baseball with ACC tournament coming up this week, and then also postseason with the NCAA tournament in baseball. And then Dawson kind of wants to talk on the college football playoff and some news we have there. And then kind of wrapping up, we got some questions and also hot takes from our listeners. So we're gonna kind of dive into those real quick, and then the upcoming week schedule in Clemson athletics. So yeah, Dawson, kind of just want to go into the baseball series recap. Ended up going to Pitt and sweeping the Pitt Panthers. So. Game one, 6-1 combined no hitter. We'll get into that in a minute. 11-2 game two, and then wrapping it up game three, which is on Saturday, 13-6. So I'm just, what were your thoughts on the baseball series this weekend, Dawson?
Yeah, I thought it was definitely needed. I mean, it's been a rough stretch for Clemson these last couple of weeks. And, Eric Bakich said a couple of days ago before the Pitt game that, they were just so excited that they were, bursting at the seams to get back out there and that, to expect a lot out of them. And hey, they delivered this weekend. Like you said, Friday or during the Thursday game, they threw a no hitter. It's Clemson's 15th no hitter in their history and the first since about 2009, I believe. I think they played USC Upstate the last time they threw a no hitter. But yeah, Knock earns a big win there. 12 strikeouts and 7 1/3 inning. Allows one run and four walks. I always find that funny. Whenever you see that a team threw a no hitter, but they still gave up runs, I'm always just, amazed by that, how that can happen sometimes. But Patrick Gardner for Pittsburgh suffered the loss. He's now 4-5 on the year. Cam Cannarella started coming on really well this weekend, and just overall, it felt like the lineup was finally clicking. Now, I don't know if that's just how bad Pitt was, or we saw a pissed off Clemson team that said, okay, we got to get our stuff together. And that was the product you saw this weekend.
Yeah, you talk on Coach Backage. Last week's press conferences that I watched, he was just, you could tell that he still had confidence in his team and that they haven't gave up yet. He said, "We're gonna bounce back and we're gonna come back even stronger." But yeah, you point out the no hitter with the run scored. Aiden Knock, another good performance. It's always weird, like you said, whenever you see a no hitter, you think, "Oh, there's no runs too." But just a couple walks and hit by pitches there. That's how that one run gets scored. But then. After Canuck comes out the game, Joe Allen comes in and throws for a little while, and then Lucas Malstead ultimately comes and closes it down. But yeah, I kind of want to go into game two. Drew Titsworth, he started again for game two of the series, ended up pitching six innings, giving up five hits on two runs and two walks and four strikeouts. So a solid outing there from Drew. And then Jacob McGovern comes in out of the pen and does a phenomenal job, pitches three innings, no hits, no runs, and no walks with three strikeouts. So there'll be some great numbers you like seeing coming out of the bullpen from Jacob McGovern.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, again, we got on them fast this game. I mean, Cam Cannarella, another four-hit game. You got Josh Pano, multi-hit game. TP Wentworth getting in there, getting a couple of hits. But one thing that I did take away from this series is Luke Gaffney. We knew he could play catcher coming into the year if need be, and we do slide him into that catcher spot, but I don't even think he had a hit this entire series. And for that reason, games one and two not having a hit, he was pulled from the Saturday lineup. We didn't see him out there Saturday. I would not guess. I'm not confirming this or anything, but I wouldn't guess that that's an injury deal. I would guess that they were probably going with the hot hand there with Jack Crichton at first over there. Those guys were playing really well, and I think Eric Bakich late in the season right now is just looking for production. It doesn't matter who it is, it doesn't matter their name, that we're looking for hits. And you can't really blame him after the last couple of weeks you've had. But game two, that was really good to see, as you get on top of them early, put the game away early. We only used two pitchers, which was really helpful for us. Like you said, Drew Titsworth is able to go a full six with two earned runs, four strikeouts, and allowing five hits, and Jacob McGovern coming up in the back half and mopping them up early. So as far as Saturday goes, I mean, it was everything you want to see right now, especially this late in the year.
Yeah, definitely a refreshing series. Definitely been kind of frustrating the past couple se or series, and you could definitely tell for those who watched the past couple episodes some of the frustrations Dawson and I have had. But definitely a refreshing series. You talk on Jack Crichton; he went off in Game Three. He went 4 for 5 with three doubles and a triple as well, and then also Colin Priest; he hit a home run in that game with 5 RBIs in the. In that game as well. And yeah, you talk on kind of a little bit of a lineup change, like you said, with TP Wentworth in there. So definitely good to see some of those guys get opportunities whenever others maybe aren't doing the same. So I mean, it's that kind of year now. You kind of want to get hot whenever you're in the lineup, coming towards the back end of the regular season and the postseason coming up, because I mean, anybody can start any given day, and I mean, if you got that spark in you, man, I mean, you're going to be put in the lineup, obviously.
Yeah, and I also do want to say that Talon Bell, it feels like they're really putting a lot of trust in him now. This is multiple weeks now where they've thrown him out in a game three situation just to, kind of see where he goes. And he goes four innings with no earned runs, strikes three guys out. Then you get to slide in your bullpen in wake of that. But if they can continue to get, guys like Talon Bell healthy. Really, I would like to say Michael Gillen, but honestly, I don't even know what we have in him. I mean, you haven't seen a lot of him, but just guys like that. I actually read on Twitter the other day, I believe someone posted it, how many injuries that Clemson has actually suffered. And it takes you back a little bit. Clemson has been put in a really weird position this year when it comes to injuries, of now having to play a bunch of guys that weren't supposed to be there. I mean, if you think about the Friday, Saturday, Sunday starters for pitchers, only one of those guys is still there from the beginning of the year. Ethan Darden has been out for quite some time now. We don't really have much of a timeline on his return. And obviously, Justin Lagernick, I don't think you're going to see him the rest of the year. So you're kind of just throwing guys together, and you're asking younger guys to step up, and you're trying to pull guys up by their bootlaces. And it almost feels like a situation to where you're kind of asking all of these guys that have not done a whole lot for you up to this point in their careers, and you're throwing them in the fire, and you're seeing what they can figure it out. So hopefully, they've been battle tested enough to, when we hit postseason play, that they can turn it on and they can flip that switch, and we can start playing ball.
Yeah, I've seen the same list as well, and it's just crazy to how many names you see on there, and it makes you think only if we had, I mean, majority of that list healthy, what we could be. But like you're saying, just throwing those guys in there straight into the fire and just getting them that experience already. But yeah, it just definitely makes you think what it could be if we had some of those guys or most of those guys healthy. So definitely just something to keep in the back of your mind there in the near future. So Clemson. They finished the regular season 41-15 overall and 18-12 in the ACC. And we'll kind of get into the ACC tournament later on in the episode. So, yeah, anything else you want to add on the baseball end, Dawson?
I don't. I mean, outside of, that's exactly what you had to do, is come in and sweep this team. And, the way they played, that probably still gives them a really good shot at hosting a regional, at least.
Yeah, I remember us talking with Daniel a little bit about it too, but we'll get into postseason stuff here in a little bit. But I kind of want to shift gears to a very important part. It just got wrapped up today, but Clemson softball, they won the Clemson regional, so they ended up sweeping the regional that they're hosting in McWhorter, beat USC Upstate in game 1, 10-2 in 5 innings, and then yesterday's game ended up beating Northwestern 1-0, in which they were the visitors in the game in 9 innings. And then today, ended up beating Kentucky, who Kentucky actually beat us earlier in the season, kind of when we were kind of having them struggles to begin with. But the Tigers regained that victory, winning 5-1, and also winning the Clemson regional. So yeah, a bunch of great performances. The Tigers stay hot from their ACC championship. Great pitching from Brooke McCubbin. I think we've touched on it time and time again about how good she's been, especially coming out the pen and getting in the circle after Reese Basinger gives some quality pitching there. And then Kylie Johnson, another home run in the Clemson regional. We all know her home run in the ACC tournament helped secure that ACC championship. And then also a home run from Haley Whitesides as well. So yeah, just what are your thoughts about softball, Dawson? What you thinking?
Yeah, I mean it was quick and easy, although it didn't feel like Saturday's game was super easy, in a 1-0 game like that. It was tight, you go 9 innings and I mean anything can happen. And even you look at today, there were so many opportunities for Kentucky to get in this game. We had the bases, I believe it was 4-1 at one point for us, and we have the bases loaded and you feel like you're that close to blowing this game open. And running away with it, and you only get one run out of it. So I mean, it felt like we were kind of watching a baseball game out there for a little while. But yeah, overall, I'm really proud of the way this team has battled and has grown. I mean, it would not be a surprise to me if you see John get some baseball coach or softball coach of the year hype. How well he's turned this team around. Because when you came into the year, you had all these young players that. It felt like there was a target on their back and they had to perform to a certain level because of this is Clemson softball. But, kudos to him and the veterans of this team, calming everybody down and, taking away those expectations and letting everybody play freely like you've seen all, the rest of the year. And, now it looks like we're going to Texas. So they're going to try to avenge Dabo Swinney out there in Austin.
Yeah, talking back on Coach Rittman, man, you can't be proud of the better job that he's done with this team this year. We've said it time and time again, coming out not too hot, and everybody kind of had their doubts with it being a young team and just a new look of a team after all those veterans have graduated, and then ends up turning it around, wins the ACC, and then comes in and wins the Clemson regional. And yeah, it's just crazy, man. If you would have told me at the beginning of the season that Clemson softball would be heading to a super regional, I probably wouldn't doubt you, but I might have been scratching my head a little bit from when I seen the beginning of the year. But yeah, just can't compliment Coach Rittman enough. And yeah, like you said, Dawson, going to Texas again, but this time in softball. So hopefully those softball girls can get that loss back from football season.
Yeah, definitely. I know we'll be watching and rooting for him.
Yeah, definitely. So good luck to Coach Rittman and Clemson softball. We'll definitely be keeping up, and make sure you keep up on Tiger View Media with all of the updates on that end of softball. So kind of switching back to baseball now, more postseason talk. So Clemson ends up finishing fifth, or the fifth, getting the fifth seed, and they get one bye, not two byes, so just one seed short of getting that double bye. But we were the seventh seed for a little bit, and then I think some things switched up with other conference games. But man, it's just I wish we could have got that fourth seed. But I mean, one bye is better than no bye. So yeah, just what you thinking about this ACC tournament in Durham?
Well, the way I look at it, it almost feels like the more games we play might be the better. More chances to stack wins and prove to the committee, I guess, that yeah, hey, we are still the team that you saw earlier in the year, that we're still worthy of hosting a national seed. And like you said earlier, we'll play the winner of Virginia Tech and Stanford, and then the if we're able to advance, we will take on NC State again with a rematch. So. If we can get to that NC State game, I do feel really good about our odds because if you beat NC State, you're taking on Georgia Tech, who is the number one overall seed, even though they are, I believe they're an unranked team. So, hey, you play a couple of good games, anything can happen. The only thing that what I'm really, I guess glad about is we are getting to avoid Florida State and North Carolina as long as possible. So we won't take on them until the championship. So, You really don't know right now. It's hard to say. And even for Clemson is, are you going to have enough depth to run the table in a bracket like this? You know, that's going to be one of the things that concerns me. And, you know, are you going to be able to carry this momentum on that you had from this weekend into this upcoming week in the tournament? You know, that's probably a big question mark for me.
Yeah, definitely a big opportunity to avenge some losses from earlier in the season. But you talk on NC State getting the double bye, and we'll play them if we beat the winner of whoever comes out of the Virginia Tech Stanford game. But like I was saying a couple weeks ago, if you remember, it seems like sometimes whenever teams get those byes and kind of get that little bit of time off, they kind of lose their, I guess, hot streak, you could say. So definitely a big opportunity there. Like you were saying, with us getting to play some more games, so hoping that we can kind of pick up where we left off during the Pitt series. But yeah, definitely a big opportunity to avenge that loss if we can get to the NC State game, and then like you were saying, us avoiding Florida State and North Carolina. I think that's a big opportunity, and I think we have a pretty good path to what I'm looking at. And then, I mean, I know Georgia Tech got the number one seed and ended up winning the ACC regular season, but hey, if you remember a couple months back, we beat Georgia Tech in Atlanta. So, but yeah, Georgia Tech's really hot right now, but just got to keep that in the back of your mind always.
Yeah, definitely. And you know, even for that, going into the regional, I think this is really important. I've seen a couple of projections D1 had us hosting, which, you know, I think they had us at like an 11 seed, and I wish I would have saved it because it looked like a pretty favorable matchup for us. But again, I mean, the pitching depth is really going to be a question mark for me in this regional and, you know, potential super regional. Is do we have the depth to go, you know, three, four, maybe five games? Do we have it in us? And, you know, a lot about what it is in the postseason is not so much about how good of a team you are and how many good hitters you have is timely hitting. You know, if you can't hit with runners in scoring position in big moments like that, total just wasted innings. You know, you get into the fifth, sixth, seventh, you know, inning, crunch time innings, and it's a one run game, and you have two guys in scoring position and you can't get them across. I mean, that is detrimental in a weekend where every single game matters, you know. That's, you know, a thing that's going to follow me, of are we going to be able to produce hits when they matter, and can our pitching depth keep up?
Yeah, you talk about pitching. I think that's the biggest question, and I think everybody's saying the same questions. How's our pitching depth going to look coming into NCAA tournament play? But then also you talk about scoring with runners on, especially in the eight or nine innings. I mean, that's been our Achilles heel kind of as of late, and you just got to get over that bad hump of not being able to perform in those big moments. But yeah, also another projection I've seen for regionals. We weren't hosting. But this was earlier on in the week, but I seen where we were having to come back to Conway to play in the Coastal Regional. So yeah, Coastal's definitely looking hot right now too. But just I mean, nothing beats having to or being able to actually host your own regional. So definitely some more work we have to do before I can kind of feel comfortable with us hosting. But I mean, we'll see. Still a lot of baseball to be played.
That is true. You know, the ACC tournament, that is not going to be, you know, unless it's like last year and we lose, you know, we lose the first game and we automatically know that we're not going to the championship. You know, it could be a situation like that, but you know, if we lose in our if we lose out early in this ACC tournament, we better be crossing our fingers come selection Sunday or select, you know, selection day.
Yeah, definitely kind of want to pad that resume a little bit more, just to feel safe. And you definitely want to kind of make a deep run in that ACC tournament if you can. But yeah, we'll see. I mean, we'll see how it all plays down. Like I said, a bunch of baseball to be played, and I mean, I've seen some crazy things happen in baseball, man. That's just the glory of the sport. You never know what's going to happen. Anybody can beat anybody on any given day. So we'll be watching, and just can't wait to see what happens. All right. Well, Dawson, I'm gonna let you lead now. You kind of want to talk on some of the college football playoff news we've been kind of getting out lately. So, yeah, I'll let you lead, and then I'll add in.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just gonna shoot straight from the hip, and you know, it's kind of starting to gain more traction now that the NCAA will be voting on a 16-team playoff. You know, we knew expansion was coming. We probably had that good idea, and And I'd like to tell people that it was never a goal for 12 teams. It was always going to be 16 so that you could have the automatic buys. The SEC, they'll get four. The Big Ten, they'll get four. And then, all the rest of the conferences, ACC will get two, Big 12 will get two, and then there will be room for at-large bids. And probably, a Notre Dame will have to get, thrown in there somewhere. But, my opinion, I believe, has really changed on automatic bids. I used to be really against it because I did feel like the SEC and the Big Ten were getting too much power, and they are, but what are the alternatives? Let's say this. I think what people have really been disappointed with now, they feel like with the automatic bids and the 12-team playoff, is they almost feel like regular season games matter less, especially conference games. If you inducted a system to where you did have automatic bids and the SEC knew they had four teams, that race now for, number one and number two, we know, they know who that's going to be. They're going to lock those two teams up. But now that race for three and four becomes even bigger. And I listened to Josh Pate speak on it the other day, and he laid it out to say as far as this, the conference championship games would almost not even matter in that point or in that case. So you could probably see where even, Lane Kiffin mentioned it, where the one and the two team from the SEC could totally sit out. They could not play. Three and four could then play five and six, three playing five and four playing six. They could play out for those last two spots to get in. They could have a essential play-in game. Now, you don't think, now, do you think, imagine the excitement and the hype and the intensity that you would see from the middle of the pack in an SEC or a Big Ten would be having if they knew that those last two spots were their play-in spot. That you would see so much intensity, and I think that would actually improve the state of the game if you had that going on.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. With those lower seeds kind of battling it out to make a chance to get into the playoffs, I think that definitely does build for more excitement. But kind of touching back what you were talking about with the 12 team playoff, I kind of agree with you. That was really never the case. It was kind of just let's expand it a little bit, see what it does, and then kind of little by little move on with our ultimate plan. But yeah, especially with the conference championship games, I think that does take it out of the picture. But I mean, what is your opinion on it? Because I mean, I kind of do like the conference championship games, but I mean, if you're moving in this format, I can kind of see the not need for it. So, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, it's tough to say. I am always a fan of conference championship games. Always have been, always will be. I love it, the part of the game. But when you are talking about a 16-team playoff, it does call into question for, like I said, the Big Ten and the SEC. Will they need to play one? Who cares? That most likely you're gonna know who's number one. Now all you're trying to do is you're trying to fight and get the best three and four team in for your conference. That is your goal at this point. If you know who if you're the number one team in the SEC, nine times out of 10, you're probably the best team in the country or second best team in the country. So you're not concerned about them proving themselves or winning, getting a SEC championship. What you're then concerned about is how much depth you can build going into the playoff with your three and four seed, much like the ACC. If you're the number one team in the ACC, you're most likely, flat out, you're most likely Clemson, or you're another big brand. But now what you're doing is you're gonna try to find the best number two team that you can get. Whoever you can throw in there that you think could win you a playoff game, that's what you're gonna do. And I see all these people talking about it, and I get it from an ACC side to where you're saying, well, that's not fair. The SEC is going to swallow up four seeds, and the Big Ten's going to swallow up another four. That's not fair. We're not going to agree to that. And I would tell them, hey, what are your other options? What are your other options? Because regardless what happens, if this vote passes or it doesn't pass, the SEC is getting what they want. Because if it doesn't happen, then the SEC has even more of a right. They might get five or six teams in at that point. And when it comes down the road, and I've always thought this, that the SEC and the Big Ten, they want to move towards a NFL style of college football where it's either you're the Big Ten or you're the SEC, and nobody else can play ball. Because they have swallowed up so many big brands now to where they own the media contracts. And I fear that we're going to get to a point to where the SEC and the Big Ten, if they're going to keep pushing around the NCAA just like they've done so far, where they're going to say, you know what? Screw it. We don't need you. And they're going to go out and line up their own media contracts. And it's going to be the Big Ten and the SEC with all the large brands buying up everybody, buying up the contract deals. Fox is going to be playing them pretty much to where the NCAA is not going to be doing a whole lot. And you're going to look at teams like Clemson and Notre Dame and Florida State, the big brands that are not a part of the Big Ten and the SEC. And you're going to be saying, what are you going to do? Sure, Clemson pulls in a heavy market and Notre Dame pulls in a heavy market. But what are we going to do in a situation to where we're totally devalued, deplatformed, and the only way that you can really get that you can really get ahead in college football would be to join the Big Ten or the SEC. Is there would be no point in trying to save face and trying to save the ACC from the turmoil that it'll be in.
Yeah, it's all about one thing, and that one thing's money. And you know what money does? Money talks. So, I mean, I couldn't agree more with those two big conferences, the SEC and the Big Ten, kind of making their way and kind of possibly shoving the NCAA out of the way. But the future is definitely going to be crazy. I know it's only the beginning of it, but it's going to be crazy to see what happens in the next couple of years. But another thing I do want to touch back on the conference championship games, you've kind of seen the start of it, just like the decline of them. If you look back the past couple of years, attendance-wise, I know I went to the ACC Championship this past year, and I mean, it wasn't as full as I've seen it before on TV. And even with the SEC Championship game, you can kind of see just the start of it and those decline in attendance numbers. And I mean, you just got to think, like, it's only a matter of time before they're not even in the picture anymore. So, yeah.
The problem is with, the modern day college football is the people that are making the decisions have totally phased out the biggest key, and that's the fans. What do the fans want? They don't, you're not getting enough questions asked like that anymore in these boardroom meetings. And now I don't personally blame these athletic directors and these representatives from schools for pushing for expanded playoffs, pushing for SEC or Big Ten dominance, because truthfully, if you're the athletic director at Georgia or at Alabama, and the president of your school tells you do whatever you must to get us more power, you're gonna do that. You're gonna be in that same situation. And truthfully, it's not their problem that the ACC has totally fallen off a cliff in the last 10 years and failed to act. While the SEC was lining up new TV contracts and lining up big teams and taking advantage of what they had to their disposal, the ACC was sitting on their hands and watching Clemson win and just saying, hey, that's all we got. That's pretty much it. The ACC totally has been in a mess, and now you're seeing it. It's kind of like you're putting trash in your locker at the beginning of the school year. You're doing all right and it's not noticeable, and you keep throwing trash in there. We'll deal with it later. Clemson's still in the, Clemson's going to the national championship. We're making plenty of money. We don't need to add anybody else. And then you get to the end of the year and you open up that locker and it all falls out on you. And that's where we're at right now. You're saying, holy crap, how did this happen? The SEC swallowed up all the big brands. The Big Ten swallowed up all the big brands. And now, if you're an ACC representative, you're pointing your finger at them saying, you ruined college football. And do they have a point? Yeah, they probably do. But at the same time, we're not in a fairness game anymore. We are in a survival of the fittest. And you've got to do everything you can to save what you have. And the ACC has totally squandered that. And it is embarrassing to know that, they're going to be, unless things change, you're looking at them being another Pac-12 in probably the not so distant future.
Yeah, like I said, just definitely crazy future. I am for the extended playoffs, though. I think it gives you obviously more games in the college football season. You get better storylines, underdog stories. I mean, everything that comes with it. So, yeah, I'm all for the extended playoffs. So, yeah, just I can't wait to see what all it brings with it as well, like you've been explaining. But and I think you couldn't put it any better way than you did with the trash in the locker thing. But yeah, just definitely can't wait to see what the future holds with college football and especially the playoff.
Yeah, and two, I know that we talked about this previously, and I'm sure all of our listeners have seen it in the news. The Ohio State lawmakers are getting pretty ticked off about the 12 o'clock kickoff. And there's two ways you can look at this. Now, before I go on, I do want to say that that's not going to have like any relevance whatsoever, this law, because you know what Fox is going to do. They're not going to put up with the hassle. They'll just drop the contract, and but here's the politics side of this. Ohio State fans do not want the 12 o'clock game, but I would say they've done it to themselves. Ohio State is such a big brand that Fox knows that they could slide them at any time. So they could play at 4 a.m. in the morning against Wichita State, and they would probably be a top 10 viewed game of the weekend. So Fox is perfectly okay with sliding them at the 12 o'clock spot where there is no competition. ESPN has the weaker games of their schedule at the 12 o'clock slot. So Ohio State can slide in at 12 and dominate the market from a viewership standpoint and from a money-making standpoint as a part of their Fox contract, which they want to earn the most money. So you can't blame Fox and the TV networks for wanting to for having Ohio State at that 12 o'clock slot so many times, because why would you try to put Ohio State head to head every weekend at 7 o'clock against other elite matchups that ESPN is trying to load their roster with, when you can go to 12 o'clock and have all you want? So I understand it from a, for the fans, for their perspective, is they don't want to see their team play at 12 o'clock all the time. But with the contract deal they're in, that's unfortunately, that's the way the game plays. But, from a writer's standpoint, from a media standpoint, you kind of wish every game could be at 12. You cover the game and you're done. You, especially if you're traveling to these games, you're home before 7. That's the great thing about it. But from a fan perspective, I do understand their frustration, and I wish that there were more fan input in these decisions being made rather than, hand over fist with dollars.
Yeah, you make good points there, and I mean, I'm probably not the only person to say this, but I kind of don't like the big noon kickoff, but like you said, it's another money situation. It's another media thing. Like your partner, or you're going up against ESPN, and like you said, you can throw Ohio State here at the news slot, and it'll get watched. Other than them being at the 7 o'clock spot, and you got other big games going on ESPN. So I mean, I know if I was a Ohio State fan, I would definitely be upset, but kind of talking on Clemson, I think it kind of worked out for us too, because now Clemson and LSU, we get the primetime game on ES is it ESPN or ABC? I can't remember. One of the two.
I believe it might be ABC, to be
It's one of the
honest.
two, but we get the 7:30 game. That's what I'm trying to say. But yeah, I mean, I don't know. I mean, like I said, money talks. But yeah, that's my thoughts on it.
Yeah, I would not. I knew that. I think everyone else did probably know that Ohio State was gonna get put on Fox as their contract. But the question to me was, would ESPN try to put their number one game, being LSU Clemson, up against Fox's number one game, whatever time slot they wanted to match that? That's what I was worried about from a, if Clemson were to get the 12 spot. And I'm really surprised actually that they gave us the prime time slot. That's not really something that Clemson's been lucky with of big games as of late. And I also can guarantee you right now that when we play in Baton Rouge next year, that'll be a night game. So don't even question that. If it's an SEC home game, they're probably going to get what they want if that game even gets played. But yeah, that's probably another story for a different day.
Yeah, that'll definitely be a night game. But like you were saying with Clemson getting those noon games, I mean, with big games, I mean, you think back last year, the South Carolina game at noon, and then a couple years back, you get whenever Notre Dame came to play us. That was an early game. So, definitely excited it's a night game. But also, I was kind of worried that it would be a day game, just given our luck as of late in the past couple of years.
Yeah, I also think a 12 o'clock game on August 30th in Clemson, you probably would have people dying in that stands from the heat. So yeah, thank God we'll get a little bit of cool off.
Yeah, I can attest to that. I remember it was like the first game of my freshman year at Clemson, and we were playing like Charleston Southern, but it was like a noon kickoff or 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock kickoff, early kickoff. And I mean, man, the heat in Death Valley in August, man, it can be miserable, and it is miserable. And you definitely got to make sure you're hydrated and got some sunscreen on, because man, it does for a long day in there.
Definitely.
All right. Well, you got anything else to add on that end?
I do not.
All right. Well, kind of getting into a little bit of the fun side of things. So we had some questions and also some hot takes from our listeners. So I'm gonna kind of let Dawson lead on that, because he was the one that was kind of gathering those up.
Okay, we're gonna start number one. This is from Connor from Sumter, South Carolina. His hot take is that South Carolina will be drastically worse than what they were this past year. What would you make of that? I'll give my opinion in a second after you.
I think it's one of those things that you kind of have to look back on what we talked about last week with Daniel. It's one of those things is Carolina's got a high ceiling, but they also got a low floor. So it's definitely kind of what they make out of it. A thing we also talked about, it's also how Lenora Sellers plays this year, and then also kind of how South Carolina's defense holds up. I mean, those are the two big questions. So yeah, I don't know. That is a good hot take or a question, but yeah, that it's really based off of those two factors, honestly.
Yeah, I would disagree with it because I don't think that South Carolina will be drastically worse than what they were this past year. And the reason why I say that is because Lenore Sellers is the heart of that team. You will go as far as he can go, and I legitimately do believe that he could be a Heisman candidate this year. And I know, look, I know people are going to bring up the stats. They're going to say he had 18 touchdowns. What are you talking about? He wasn't all that special. And I would like to point out the fact that Cade Klubnik probably had around that same number in 2023, and you saw his massive jump in 2024. And even you feel like there was a lot of meat left on the bone. And I'm not saying that Lenore's is a better quarterback than Cade Klubnik, but I'm saying Lenore's style of play, it excites people more. It draws more eyes. And with the schedule that he will play, if he were to be in the, let's say, total touchdowns, if he's in the 40s for his total touchdowns and he's 3,500 passing yards, 10 picks or less, they're going to have a really tough time not putting him in that Heisman conversation. And I'd say if he's in the Heisman conversation, then Carolina's got at least 7 wins on the year. So I think if he can continue to gain traction and gain momentum, that South Carolina should have no problem making a bowl game this year. But on the other hand of that is if you see him struggle a lot and you see the offense be slow and you see that things are just not clicking with them, that I could also see a scenario where they win 5 games. So to me, the low would be about 5 games, and the high for me would be I would put them at 9 wins. So I don't think they will be drastically worse, but I do agree to the fact that a lot of their success will depend on what 16 can do for them.
Yep, totally agree with that.
And number two, we will be going to Ryder from Florence, South Carolina, a local. He asked, will Clemson be consistently good this year, or will we see another regression like we saw in November of this past year? And I'm going to let you go first on this. I think I got what I want to say, but I'm going to see what you say first.
Wait, so repeat it again.
He asked, will Clemson be consistently good all year, or will we regress in November or in, the later part of the year like we did this past year?
I honestly think Clemson will be consistent this year, but then again, it won't surprise me if there is a little regress there. That's kind of been the common theme the past couple of years. But honestly, just looking at what we have, and if everybody can stay healthy, I can see where we're a consistent football team from the first game of the regular season to the last game of the regular season, heading into postseason play. So I do think there is a good chance of the Clemson Tigers playing consistent football all season long, because I mean the talent's there.
Yeah, I agree, and I tend to lean yeah that we will be consistent this year. Historically under Dabo, Clemson turns it on in November and in December, in the later part of the year. That is when they start hitting their stride. And last year, it felt like the team, I don't want to say peaked early, because obviously you were able to finish strong. You were able to beat SMU in the playoff, although it came, it didn't come easy. But yeah, to me, is it felt like we kind of took advantage of playing some really bad teams early on in that year. And then when November hit, you dropped the game to Louisville, you struggled against Pitt. You were able to wrap up the game against Virginia Tech, but early on, you didn't. I don't even think we scored a touchdown the first half of that game, so you struggled there. And then you lose to South Carolina, so. I see where Clemson fans want to say that, yeah, we will, it could be another year like that where we take some hits. But the alternative to that is you play a great game. Maybe you lose one early to LSU, but other than that, you run the table in the ACC like you should. The ACC ain't all that this year. Your schedule's really not that hard. Your hardest two teams are SEC teams, truthfully. So even if you lost both of those games, you still go 10-2, you make the playoffs, and you're looking all right. So for me, is I will say that, I'm going to go out on a limb and say, yeah, Clemson will be consistently good this year. I got us beating LSU. I got us beating, I got us beating rolling through the ACC schedule. I could see, weirdly, I could see a loss to North Carolina. It's just something about it. I know the stars aren't really lining up for them in North Carolina, and you got a lot going on with Bill's girlfriend, but I just could see where we drop that game. But in today's world, it's okay to drop a game. You drop one game, and like Ohio State did, maybe it locks you in, maybe it focuses you up. So as long as we don't see a collapse in production, I think that's the biggest part, is where people get things confused. In 2016, when Clemson lost the game to Pitt, there wasn't a drop off in production on the offensive side. You weren't seeing Deshaun Watson playing terrible. He played, I think he had 500 yards that game and lost. What people were upset about Clemson is these past couple of years is, you were losing close games, but your production was looking horrible. It didn't feel like you were playing the same ball overall. So I think that's going to be the thing that everyone wants to see, is even in a loss, can we see good production out of our team?
Yeah, there always seems to be that sneaky ACC team that always gets up on you. With Clemson, you think of Pitt, you think of Syracuse, but I kind of agree with you, Dawson, about North Carolina. If you remember last time we went to Chapel Hill, I mean, it wasn't that good of a game, but we still came out with a win. But I mean, yeah, there's definitely always that little kind of sneaky ACC game in your schedule. But like you were saying, the new day and age of college football, you can deserve to drop a game or two and still be right in the mix for the college football playoff.
And another question here coming from Connor in Columbia. He asked, or he said, he makes the prediction that LSU will make the semifinals. And I'll go first here. I guess I could see a world where that happens, but here's the problem. They're gonna have to beat a lot of good teams to in order to do that. Do we think Brian Kelly can win the big games? Do we think do I think this roster is good enough to make the semifinals? I do, yeah. But they have a lot in front of them first. We're gonna have to see them August 30th just to see who they are. My presumption is if they're good enough to make the semifinals, and if they make it, then that probably means they did extremely well in conference play. And I'm probably talking, they're probably going to the SEC championship. And are they a team capable of that? Absolutely. But do I think that they will make the semifinals? I just can't. I can't see it right now. I can't get on board without seeing a little bit more of them.
Yeah, I definitely agree. Like you were saying, there definitely is a world where I do see them making it, but I mean, they got a big workload ahead of them. I mean, starting out with Clemson first game, and then you got to go through an always tough SEC schedule, and then yeah, I mean, I could see it happening, but realistically, I really don't see it happening either.
And then here we have another question here. This is coming from Dalton Hallman on Twitter. He commented this. He has two bowl predictions. FSU will be looking for a new head coach at the end of the year, and Cade Klubnik will be Clemson's first ever Heisman Trophy winner. So I always love to break down these two-part questions. So I guess we'll start with number one. Gavin, do you think that FSU could fire Mike Norvell after this year?
Yeah, I think it's a great possibility. I mean, you see what happened last year, and I mean, Florida State's always been a big brand in college football, and whenever you have a team like that that goes, what, 2-10, and I mean, you got to think, I mean, Florida State fans, they're passionate about their football, so I don't even think, I think if it keeps up, I think Mike Norvell might even have an early exit, early part in the season, maybe midway through. I don't think they'll wait a whole entire season if they're like drastically bad again to make a head coaching change. So it's definitely something to keep a lookout for, but I don't think if Florida State does bad again and keeps up with just bad games and losing games that they never lost before, or I mean not even competing, I think there's a chance we might see Mike Norvell out of Tallahassee early.
Yeah, I would probably agree with that. But a point I would bring up is his buyout. Man, I mean, even last year when people were calling for his head, is you got to understand Florida State's not going to fire him. They would have been paying him out, way above $50 million. That is just not a financial situation they're going to be looking at. They don't want to do it because they had to organize the buyout for the ACC. Stadium remodels. They're looking at a lot of expenses right now, and probably the last thing on their list for paying right now is if they had to fire their head coach of their football team that took them to the playoffs. So I do think it, I mean, if they have a 2-10 season again, I really don't see him sticking around down there in Tallahassee. But if they win 5 or 6 games, maybe get 7, then I don't think he's going anywhere. I really don't. So I'm gonna say that's probably that's not really a bad take, but I think it's more of a predictive take. What is everyone talking about right now? And that's probably Florida State's head coaching situation if this Thomas Castellanos trial goes awry.
Yeah, I like how you pointed out the business side of it, because that is another thing you do have to take in check with that too. But yeah, I think if they do win, like you said, 5 to 7 games or so, I think they kind of hold up a little bit for a minute and just see what he can do the season after next. So yeah.
And then the second part of that question, Cade Klubnik will be Clemson's first Heisman Trophy winner. I don't think that's a hot take at all. I think that is a lukewarm take, water that you find in your car during the spring kind of take. Cade Klubnik has a ton of hype coming into this year. He's often put at number one or number two in the quarterback rankings. And we all know that the Heisman is. It feels like a quarterback's award. Now, I know Travis Hunter won it last year, but for the most part, this is a big time quarterback award. I think Cade Klubnik is going to have an opportunity to it because now you're seeing you got a little bit weaker of a quarterback class. So if you're automatically the clear-cut number one quarterback in your class, then you're going to be thrown in those Heisman talks unless a guy like Travis Hunter pops up. But I don't see that happening this year. So yeah, I really do think that this is a serious possibility that Cade Klubnik, ironically, when you had Deshaun Watson and Trevor Lawrence, and you say Cade Klubnik's the Heisman winner, I think that is a little funny. But what do you think on that?
Yeah, so first you talk on Deshaun and Trevor Lawrence. I mean, they had some pretty tough battles. Obviously, Lamar Jackson winning it, Joe Burrow winning it. Some tough people to compete against, but I do think it's a great opportunity and a great possibility that Cade can be the Heisman winner. I mean, I know he's got the ball out, obviously, but I don't know. To me, as of the past couple years, I kind of feel like the Heisman's like a popularity contest more than it is a performance award. So I don't know. I mean, I kind of think if K can get that popularity, there's a chance, but that's just kind of like my take of it. I really feel like a Heisman is like more of a popularity contest and more of who the media stretches out there and kind of just runs with them. So yeah, but I do think K can win it, but yeah, that's just kind of my take with it though.
Yeah, I definitely think that, and what makes me like smile about that is if that's true that it feels like Cade's got a lot of popularity right now. Definitely, I mean, you turn on any ESPN show or you go watch any show on YouTube, and that's all they're talking about is how good of a quarterback Cade Klubnik is and how he could be a top five pick in the draft. So I think if we're speaking of terms of popularity, then yeah, he's got a really good shot. I like his chances.
I kind of want to do my own little take though. I do think even if Cade doesn't win it, I think we do see Cade in New York though.
Yeah, I think that is almost a formality if he has a progressive season, if he keeps progressing. And here we go. I got the last question slash hot take. This comes from Connor Hansen in Sumter, South Carolina, as well. He says that not a question, but my hot take is that NIL has been taken to the extent that it has been that it is now worse than it has ever been, and that this is the worst thing that has ever happened in the history of college sports. He also notes that I'm all for the players getting paid, but there's no reason someone like Carson Beck should have a sponsorship with Lamborghini. So I'm gonna let you lead off on this one. Really, really, really hear what you have to say about NIL.
Yeah, that last part makes me laugh, but I don't think NIL is the worst possible thing that has ever happened to college athletics. Obviously, yeah, I'm all for the players getting paid, but I do think it can run rampant at times, and I mean, we've seen it with different stories in college athletics, mainly with football, but I don't think it's the worst thing to ever happen in college athletics. I mean, I know you see teams like poaching other players. I mean, handing them money, giving them money to come play for them. But at the end of the day, I mean, it's a business, but I do think the NIL is good in some ways. I think it definitely does need to be regulated a lot more heavier, but I don't think it's the worst thing to ever happen to college sports, more with football, though.
Yeah, I mean, I see both sides of this. I see what he's saying. I understand that. And sometimes as a fan, it does feel like that. You do get frustrated when you're reading these headlines and you're watching On Three and they're talking about guys are re-signing to their teams. And what I also would like to tell people is block out all the noise. Don't read the headlines. It's October. You're watching football at 4 o'clock in the day, Alabama, Georgia, or whoever, does the product on the field feel the same? At the end of the day, are the bands, is the band still playing? Are the crowds still cheering? Are the players still playing with intensity? And yeah, I think so. So I think it's easy to get caught up in these news headlines and reading this about money. And this and that, and he's making this, he's making that. His agent said this, he transferred here. I think more people focus on what happens off the field rather than what they focus on what ha is happening on the field. And ultimately, college football is about the young men that are performing on Saturdays. And until, Saturdays feel any different to me, which they don't, I will refuse to say that NIL has ruined the sport. So that's what I would say to it. But I definitely do understand the frustration of the fans.
Yeah, another thing I want to add, I mean, I can see the frustrations whenever it comes to NIL and just say transfer portal, re-signing contracts. With re-signing contracts, I mean, that you think of NFL, but just that's my only issue with it, with transfer portal, getting people to transfer for more money, contracts, this and that. But I have never have a problem with a guy making money off a brand. I mean, that's just business deals. I mean, I know it's funny Carson Beck being with Lamborghini, but I mean he's a good face in college football, and I mean I don't have a problem with them having like endorsement deals with brands, because I mean that's just business, and I mean any way you can get money, that's a good thing to me.
Yeah, and I think rev sharing will kind of clean some stuff up. And I listened to Billy Napier from Florida kind of break his view down on it. And it seems like most coaches are kind of being let know what is gonna fly and what's not gonna fly. I can't remember the reporter that tweeted it. I'm so sorry, but not to steal the work, but he talked about conversations that were going on in Amelia Island for the ACC turn or for the ACC in their meetings that they looked at a bunch of NIL deals last year that would totally be illegal under the rev share cycle. So maybe there is definitely a hope there that rev sharing will clear things up and it'll kind of protect things rather than it kind of being the wild, wild west. And also, I think endorsements, especially I guess with Lamborghini, is actually probably how NIL was supposed to be originally. It was not supposed to be big donors and collectives just handing out checks for nothing to players. I think it was meant to be originally of how you can profit off of your name, not the school giving you money.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's all of them, right? All right. Anything else you want to add from any of those takes or questions?
I don't. Other than, that was a pretty good round of questions. I actually, thoroughly enjoyed reading them and, kind of going over stuff this week to prepare for them.
Yeah, I definitely like hearing what the listeners have to say, and I mean, if you guys want to do this thing every week where you have your questions or hot takes, me and Dawson will gladly appreciate them, because I do like talking about what you guys are thinking and what questions you have. So, definitely keep sending those in. But we got the upcoming week schedule for Clemson Athletics, still super light. So Clemson baseball, they head to Durham for the ACC tournament, and they will play on Wednesday at 1 o'clock in Durham, North Carolina. And like we said, it'll be against the winner of Virginia Tech and Stanford. And then for softball, they're heading to Austin, Texas to take on the Texas Longhorns and the Austin Super Regional. And the dates and times of that will be announced here at a later date once all the other softball regionals are being completed in the process right now. So yeah, that's all we got for this episode. Anything you want to add, Dawson, or touch on?
Yeah, I guess the only thing I would say is I guess these next couple of days you're gonna find out whether I'm driving 3.5 to 4 hours up to Clemson for the regional or I'm just driving 1 hour over to Conway. So I guess that's the only thing I'm paying attention to is, where I'm gonna be going when regional hits.
Yeah, I mean we're slowly winding down, but these are always the big parts of the season at the end. So definitely stay in touch with what we got going on, Dawson and I, Tiger View Media. We greatly appreciate it. But yeah, I think that'll do it for the 9th episode. So thanks for listening. Just make sure you're subscribing on YouTube if you're watching the video, or if you're listening to the audio, make sure you subscribe to us on your favorite podcast platform. But yeah, once again, it's been Gavin and Dawson on the Tiger View Podcast, and as always, go Tigers.